Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Utkarsh, and today I have with me a very special guest, Avais, who is the CEO of Pixin, a space startup. Today we'll be talking about the new reforms that the government has proposed to encourage private participation in space activities. Firstly, Avais, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Utkarsh. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So before we talk about what were the reforms, Avais, could you tell us what does your company do?
Yeah, so Utkarsh, what Pixel essentially deals with is we deal with satellite data, and that involves two aspects. We build and launch and operate our satellites that beam down satellite imagery, and we also build the tools to be able to take this data and provide analytics services to companies in agriculture, oil and gas, environmental science, forestry, and a whole lot of other sectors.
Oh, that's fascinating. So Avais, if I could ask you, what sort of government involvement that your company does at this particular point, and what does it expect from the government in the near future?
So at this point, there has been no collaboration as such with the government. We are operating as a standalone entity. However, there is a few things where we would definitely need to be able to work with the government. That involves, I think the first aspect would be the policy. Given that we are operating satellites and we are doing imaging with the satellites, there needs to be a licensing and regulation for both imaging as well as communication with ground. And the second aspect is in terms of partnerships on data, in terms of partnerships on the analytics, how the data that we are providing can be utilized not only by private companies around the country, but also by different government departments that have the need for it.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, there are certain restrictions on the precision of the data that you can beam back to Earth, right?
That is correct. So as it stands today, the National Remote Sensing Center is the nodal agency for all things remote sensing. So if anyone in India is to be buying any form of satellite imagery, it has to go through them as the nodal agency. The second aspect is anything which is lesser than 1 meter in spatial resolution automatically has certain restrictions to it. And NRSC decides who and who you cannot sell to.
Okay, so currently you are beaming data which is greater than 1 meter precision?
So at this moment, I cannot talk about the details of our payloads, but regardless of it being lesser than 1 meter or above 1 meter, anyone trying to sell in India has to go through NRSC at this point as the nodal agency.
Okay, so have you been through this agency, or would this happen once your payloads are up in space?
So this would happen once the payloads are up in space. So we haven't had a satellite launch yet. Our first satellite is ready to go. It was supposed to launch in July, but now launching in November due to COVID. But the fact is, once the satellite is up there, the irony is we can sell our imagery anywhere outside here, but to sell it in India, we'd have to go through NRSC. So on the NRSC front, we will definitely engage there, given that we have certain customers willing to buy data, but that will happen after we have the satellite up there. However, it's we already also have customers abroad that are interested in this, for whom we don't need to go through any regulatory hurdle.
For one of the things that the finance minister said in a speech was they would want to promote a liberal geospatial data policy so that they could provide remote sensing data to tech entrepreneurs, right? So up until now, I think we have data portals like Bhuvan, which beam data from collected from the satellites put into space by ISRO. But I think a lot of the people say that it's not in machine readable or usable format. Could you talk about it? Have you used it for your business? If it were available, would you probably use it for making your products?
So the Bhuvan is an open platform for free data. Now, given that it's free and open source, the quality of data is not anywhere near the best that ISRO can offer, right? So this is something that very coarse resolution. So if you look at all the open source data that's available, there's the Landsat data, there's the Sentinel data that the European Space Agency provides, and then there's the Bhuvan platform. So if people or companies are looking at using geospatial data, the quality of data that Landsat and Sentinel provide today compared to what Bhuvan provides is higher. So companies and organizations will naturally flock to using the Sentinel or Landsat data rather than the Bhuvan data. And we have definitely used Sentinel data and Landsat data for a variety of purposes, as have other geospatial startups in the country. Now, when the finance minister announced that they want to have a very liberal geospatial policy, I think that's a really good vision or a goal that they have set. But that would, it all depends now on the execution, whether, given countries like the United States or European countries or any other country for that matter, the policy is very liberal in the sense that unless you are using ultra high resolution imagery, you can buy imagery from anywhere and use it for your purpose, as long as it's not jeopardizing national security. As long as, and it doesn't make sense as India that there's a policy that doesn't allow us to do that. Just to give an example, if an Indian entity were to buy data from, say, Planet Labs versus an entity in the US had to buy data from Planet Labs, it would be much easier, much faster for the US entity or a European entity to be able to do that rather than an Indian entity, because they would have to go through NRC anyway. So I think a liberalization would mean putting us on level footing with any other country and at least having the coarser resolution, anything above 1 meter, to be freely usable for anyone that wants to make use of it.
So currently you have to take permission for buying data available by foreign satellites. You have to go through the NRSC layer, right?
That's correct, yeah. Like, for example, if you're looking at synthetic aperture radar data from Capella or ISAI, we will have to go through NRSC to be able to do that. And like, as of the policy, we can't directly buy it from the satellite provider themselves.
And to say this is happening even at coarse resolutions, right? Which is probably would not affect your quote-unquote national security concerns.
That's correct, yeah. And even then, for example, if you look at the United States regulatory policy, very recently, just as of a couple of days ago, they deregulized a whole lot of things, wherein they said that it doesn't make sense for us to put regulations on things where foreign entities can anyway do that. So they're going to open up the regulation and let the private companies do what they can do up until the point that any international, like if there's an international player already doing that resolution. So for example, if I were a Luxembourg company, I would be able to download 50 centimeter data from anyone without any restriction. But if I were an Indian entity, I won't be able to do that. So to be able to put every Indian company on level footing, we need to be able to look at how the global technological advancement has been and say that, okay, like if a company in this country is able to do this without any regulation, for India to be able to step up and reach that point, we need to be able to deregulate it up until that point at least.
Correct. So it actually makes sense for India to do that as a country, as well as for the private entrepreneurs as well, right? So if somebody like you or I can download it, or somebody sitting anywhere in this world can download 50 centimeter data, there is no requirement for the government of India to regulate it and spend important capacity in regulating and imposing those laws when it is actually not required, right? So as long as the international laws allow it, there's no sense for Indian companies to lay down extra regulations, which does not achieve any purpose, as well as requires capacity which could be put in other places where it is required.
Correct. Yeah. Like if an Indian company can't do a particular resolution, but a Singapore or a US company can do the same, what's stopping the entrepreneurs here from setting up companies there and having a brain drain, right? So that's what needs to be looked at while setting a liberal policy.
Correct. Another idea which the finance minister talks about was about providing a level playing field for private companies and satellites launches and space-based companies. So Avais, if I understand correctly, even you are planning to launch your satellite using a US launch vehicle, is that correct?
We're using the Soyuz launch vehicle from Russia, the Russian SpaceX.
Sorry, you're using Soyuz. So is there a particular reason you are not going with the PSLV?
So in this case, it was actually a matter of cost and timeline. We were looking at a particular cost and we were looking at what timeline we need to launch a satellite in. The cost actually came out to be better from the Russian Space Agency. They gave us a good deal on both insurance as well as the launch price, right? In fact, when we went out, we looked at every launch provider that was there to see which best fit us in both timeline and price. We looked at SpaceX, we looked at Rocket Lab, we looked at ISRO as well as the Russian Space Agency. In the end, it just came down to a commercial decision. What is the most commercially viable option for us, and like which one of these fits the timeline that we are looking at? We hope to have launched from India because it was logistically easier for us to launch it, but hopefully the future satellites, we can do that from here.
Correct. Makes sense. So what I hear from a lot of the entrepreneurs in India is that it's easier for a foreign satellite to launch from a PSLV as compared to an entrepreneur who is building a satellite in India to launch from a PSLV, right? Because of the tax, extra GST that is levied on the Indian players, which is exempted from the foreign players because it's an export item, right?
Correct, yeah. So if a foreign entity is booking the launch, it's considered a deemed export, and so you don't have to pay that 18%. Whereas as an Indian entity, you'll have to pay that 18%. So that also like factors into your commercial side. The costs are fairly high, so 18% makes a significant difference in companies trying to launch from anywhere. That and the fact that as a foreign entity, it's like ISRO or Andrix or New Space Limited, they have a set way of going about launching for foreign players. So they know what needs to be done, what the procedure is, and how to go about launching that. Whereas they don't have that for the for a private Indian company, because that's not really been done until now. That also makes it easy in terms of the lead times it takes for them to get back to you and be able to launch it, because like they know what needs to be done with a foreign entity, but don't really know what needs to be done with an Indian entity. One thing that factors in there, for example, is the licenses that you need to launch the satellite. For example, you will need an imaging license, you'll need a communication license. Now, there's no clarity for an Indian entity to get those. So that also adds a lot of lead time. So the like when ISRO is looking at providing a launch service to a foreign entity, these foreign entities come with the licenses from their respective countries where they can get them faster, versus an Indian entity where they need to, like the Indian entities also need to figure out where they need to get these licenses from, because no one has been given the mandate for providing these licenses to private satellite operators. I think that all pictures into the like why it's tougher for an Indian entity as of today to launch from India compared to somewhere else.
Correct. So this is actually surprising and alarming for a lot of people when they first hear it, right? Because in the newspapers, we hear about PSLV is launching 100 satellites, creating records and launching at regular intervals. But the players in India who would actually want to do it from India because of logistical and business reasons are facing it difficult to do so. So probably one out of the many areas that India needs to focus on for creating a quote-unquote level playing field is this, right?
Yes, I think there's two ways of looking at it. Maybe like the government can subsidize certain things for Indian operators if they want to boost the sector. Or in the two ways, then just make it like easy, as easy as at least a foreign entity to be able to launch from here as a base case.
Or in fact, build a business case for yourself, which is good enough for people to commercially choose that option for you, right? That's the best way to do to make it easy for everybody.
We heard that PSLV is on the cheaper end of things. So economically and commercially, it makes sense for like anyone in the world to launch from here. Now, with the SSLV also coming up in the future months, that cost advantage is set to increase. So I think like India has an inherent advantage there, and it just needs to make it easy for anyone trying to book it, be it Indian companies or foreign companies.
In fact, SSLVs is one of the areas where ISRO is actually looking at private players for manufacturing, right?
That's correct. Now, there's two aspects here. Like what ISRO is looking at is provide like having suppliers to ISRO, where these suppliers either build certain components like the engines or the electronics and provide it to ISRO. ISRO itself integrates and operates these launches. The second aspect is companies like Agnikul and Skyroot and Bellatrix trying to build their own launch vehicles. In the second case, these companies will themselves build these rockets and book the launches themselves. In the first case, it's more of these companies being private contractors to ISRO. So there's a world of difference on like what has been proposed right now in terms of privatizing the SSLV versus creating a level playing field for anyone to launch their own rockets if they want to.
Correct. So in fact, what we have seen over the years is that we have had major players like L&T and Godrej functioning as suppliers to ISRO or manufacturers to ISRO. So it's mostly been based on a legacy cost plus contracting or limited to no intellectual property creation from the private players, right? So while India being a mature space nation, the private space sector is still not enabled to do things, or it's not probably allowed to achieve the potential that they have.
That's correct. Yeah. So I think a lot of these private contractors who have been supplying to ISRO, the only the only customer for these have been ISRO till date. So it's like a one customer, one contract kind of a thing. These suppliers don't really, as you said, have no real IP of their own. But when you create a level playing field where maybe any startup can come up and try their own unique concept of having a launch vehicle, that creates IP in the country. And as we have seen with Silicon Valley or anywhere else, the more you create IP and build on top of that, the better the innovation becomes and the industry grows.
So the finance minister also talked about a predictable policy and regulatory environment. As many of us can actually imagine, for a layman, space in India means ISRO. ISRO is the be-all and end-all of all space activities in India. While this is, at one level, this is fascinating that a public enterprise, which is doing fairly well, has captured public imagination in the recent years. But if you look at it structurally, it is fundamentally flawed. ISRO is the policy-making body. It's the umpire which sets the rule. It is the body which manages and follows the rules and asks people to do, as well as it's a competitor in the space with its space objects like PSLVs, GSLVs, and SSLVs, right? So ISRO is a body which has multiple roles, which have inherent conflicts of interest, which actually leads to a lot of unpredictability and unreliability in the system, making people not understand what is the relationship with the government that is required at different stages in the value chain.
Looking at the policy, there was a policy bill drafted in 2017, which had a lot of issues in that all the IP was to be owned by Department of Space. Department of Space, as you said, has ISRO under it, which operates commercially on both the satellite side as well as the rocket side. But then it's also setting up the policies required by the private companies to follow, right? Now, in the end, since the national governments are the ones that need to be answerable to the United Nations Outer Space Treaty, the nation has to take into its own hands certain things regulatory-wise because it is liable on the international stage. Taking that into account, there can never be a truly level playing field between what the government is doing versus what private entities are doing. For example, if we take the example of United States, there's the FCC that handles all spectrum-related issues. But a majority part of the spectrum is set aside for military use or NASA use. And that's fine. Once you have created, what needs to be done, even if not a truly level playing field, is set out certain aspects of the spectrum or certain parts of the regulatory aspects and keep it aside for the National Space Agency or for national security interests. But then once you have set that demarcation, open up the rest of the things for private industry and don't interfere there. Taking the case again for spectrum, there's going to be limited spectrum that any country has that it negotiates with the International Telecommunication Union. Now, this spectrum realistically cannot be divided equally into private sector as well as the public sector. And that's fine. But if you're looking at maybe a 75-25 split or a 70-30 split, once that split is done in the private sector split, let there be favoritism, whether that's going to a government entity or a private entity. And in that 30%, let private companies do what they want to do, obviously within certain national security concerns. So in the end, if you look at any country, truly level playing field is not possible. But what is required is the National Space Agency itself needs to be able to realize that it needs to work with private space companies and it cannot do it all alone. The National Space Agency will always be the primary agency doing all space related stuff. But working with private industry just opens up so many different avenues, be it the case of European Space Agency, be it NASA, where they have taken a step back from the commercial side and said, we'll concentrate on the research side of things, but we will work with the private industry on a whole lot of other things because that means we can do things cheaper and faster. So I think that's the way to go.
So in fact, again, underlining the idea of a predictable policy in a regulatory environment, we need to have a body which can actually set the rules, which is independent. And once the rules are set, there is no arbitrariness there and things work according to a given set of rules and regulations and not according to the whims and fancies of the powers that be.
Yeah, I think for a rocket company or for a satellite company in India, Like, there's no clarity on which department to reach out to obtain the certain regulations that are needed to even operate. That causes, you know, that's a risk to a company that's just starting up. That's a risk to investors trying to invest in these companies. So having a clear cut, straightforward policy where at least people know what to do, who to approach, and what's doable, what's not doable, just reduces that risk for both the startups as well as any investor trying to invest in this sector.
Correct. In fact, what I would want to talk about here is it makes sense for the National Space Agency to actually partner and promote private players because, as you said, National Space Agency cannot achieve cater to all the capabilities and capacities that are required by the people of this country right now, right? Say broadband or say the most typical example of DTH transponder capacity in India. Most Indian players, DTH companies, have leased transponder capacities from foreign satellites because of restrictive policies and ISRO believing that it can actually build all the capability itself.
Yeah, I mean, like, definitely. Like, especially in sectors which need a lot of government support, which need a lot of infrastructure spending upfront, the national governments need to be a strong pillar for the private industry to fall back on, at least in the initial stages. If you're looking at any other industry where there is not a lot of upfront investment required, the government can sort of let the regulations be and let the companies do what they want. But the odds of a space company reaching a level that it needs to be able to provide the services it needs to provide, a lot of upfront investment is required, and a lot of handholding is required in certain cases to grow the industry. And that's where the support of the government or the National Space Agency becomes very important. NASA has been doing that in the US. The JAXA has been recently doing that in Japan. The European Space Agency has been doing that in Europe with, you know, Luxembourg and other countries having very liberal geospatial policies as such. So given this announcement from the finance minister very recently, I think the next step would be for, what ISRO has done has been tremendous. As a standalone entity for the past 60, 65 years, what it has achieved with limited resources it has is unparalleled. Now what it needs to do is private companies need to stand on the shoulder of this giant to be able to learn from what they have done, complement what it is doing, and like grow the space ecosystem in the country in general.
So a synergistic relationship which can actually manifest the powers of both the private and the public sector.
Yeah. And there's a few ways of doing that from the national, like from the government level. Either the government becomes, you know, a buyer for a few of these services, which helps these startups get certain revenue and sustain themselves. It can, with the space budget that it gets annually, maybe set aside some aspect of it towards providing grants towards private projects that will help the Indian space program in the long run. Becoming, you know, a contractor as well to ISRO. So, like, either by buying these services or by enabling these services through grants and easy policy.
Correct. So, as we talked about the private sector being allowed to ISRO facilities to use its capacity. Again, the importance of IP rights, which were not given in the 2017 draft bill, which was actually not tabled, but it's important to realize that you need to give the spoils of the creation to the creator. Otherwise, there's no incentive for an Indian and smart entrepreneur to go all the way and make something, right? There needs to be a relationship where there's a trust between the National Space Agency as well as the private players, and both of these can synergistically lead India forward into the new space mission.
Absolutely. I think, as you said, in the end, what a startup has that is unique to itself is its trade secrets or its intellectual property. And if that is taken away, then there's no motivation to be able to do it long term, because whoever owns the IP decides what to do with it. Now, understand that there are certain national security concerns here, which is why it needs to be curtailed. But like, in the end, if a private company is doing something, the intellectual property belongs to that private company. Yes, as a country, you can set maybe certain restrictions which might be very harmful to, you know, national security concerns, etc. on the very high end. But apart from that fact, it's necessary that at least the opening up of IP be towards the private space ecosystem. For example, very recently, even there was an announcement of opportunity for different technologies needed for sustained human presence from India in space, India's manned space flight program. That was only limited to academic and research institutes, which after the announcement was said that it would be opened up to the private sector. But one clause in there was that all IP that will be like developed, regardless of who built it and with whose money it was built, will be jointly owned by the principal investigator and ISRO. And it can't be used without the permissions of ISRO anywhere else. That beats the entire purpose of a private company putting its own resources and developing something. Because like, if we can sell it here, we should be able to sell it somewhere else. That's how the entire business is made. And if you're stopping or curtailing revenues being made due to controlling of this IP, then as I said, there's no motivation for entrepreneurs in space or in just general any other industry to do what they want to do.
Correct. There needs to be incentive for the private player to actually come and do business in India. Otherwise, what you'll see is people moving out of the country and doing whatever they can do on the Indian soil, with Indian, and boosting the Indian economy. One last thing that I would want to talk to you about is about the finance minister talking about future projects for exploration and outer space travel to be open to private sector. Now, I find this is, maybe this is long term, but I find this intent wise, I think this is extremely positive, and this seems that, okay, people can believe that Indian players can actually go out for space exploration, right?
Absolutely. I think that was one of the most interesting points of that thing where they said, you know, interplanetary missions will also be opened up to the private sector, which is a huge boost. Team Indus has been trying to do this for quite some years, where they wanted to, you know, launch their lunar rover and lander on the moon. That didn't happen due to a variety of factors. But one thing that it opens up is it opens up the ecosystem as a whole. That means companies now are not only limited to doing something that... like 100 other companies are doing worldwide, which is building satellites or rockets. It enables them to look at novel technologies like maybe, you know, last mile space tugs in space, or providing communication between moon bases and Earth, looking at bio 3D printers, looking at 3D printers in space, looking at in situ resource utilization or in situ resource manufacturing in space, which means that like totally unique niche areas which have not been very populated with a lot of countries, very unique companies or startups can come up that can do these things. And these applications will not only be limited to space, but will also trickle down to a lot of other terrestrial applications. For example, if there's a company that's trying to do maybe bio 3D printers for space, right, looking at manufacturing tissues or just experimenting in space, that is something that has a lot of trickle down effects on the health industry as well. If you can utilize what you have learned in space to manufacture, to 3D print bio organs or tissues here on ground. And that's just an example I'm taking that holds for a variety of other reasons, a variety of other applications. So I think that's very interesting. When you open this up, then it means that the entrepreneurs in the country can like definitely dream big, look at very niche areas, look at unique areas which have not been tapped before globally, and work on those things.
Avais, the last thing that I would want to ask you is that all of us have heard these announcements. If you have stayed in this and heard about these announcements long enough, but what are you actually hopeful for in the near future when it comes to Indian space?
So there's like the hopes are you like the hopes are the, like large from our end. The inspiration was that ISRO has been doing such tremendous things, and there's a potential for the private industry to sort of augment and build on top of that, which is why we started out. The announcement from the finance minister, I think something like this is coming from such a top position for the first time ever in the country. And that's an important, this is like a very important fact, given that if a mandate is set by the government that this is the vision that we're striving towards, maybe the Department of Space and ISRO will work with that to be able to make that a reality. That said, the announcement is just a first step in a series of maybe 100 steps that need to be taken. The next steps would be like actually implementing the different points that were mentioned in that address, starting with a straightforward, clear policy which provides level footing. And if they want private companies to be, you know, co-travelers in this journey, it means having an independent regulator that does not provide favoritism only to the government or the private industry. Having a like an independent regulator that can take a look at that essentially does not differentiate whether it's a private company or otherwise, and executing on, you know, the liberal geospatial policy, ISRO opening up its facilities, opening up its resource and knowledge base, and private companies essentially building on top of what ISRO has done over the years so as to not reinvent the wheel. It all depends on the execution now. But given that something like this has come from top for the first time, the hopes are high compared to as of a couple of years ago.
So in these unprecedented and tough times for the world, I think the announcements do spark some hope and clarify that the intent is there. It just needs to be seen if the implementation is done in the manner that we hope for or it is or not. And on that positive note, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Avais.
Thank you so much, Utkarsh. Thank you for having me.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.